Good afternoon. I'm calling to order this meeting of the Tax Committee for February 9th, 2023.
Do we have a quorum?
Okay. Well, we're waiting for a quorum to get here while we're doing that. Or can we, does that mean we can't approve the minutes if we don't have a quorum?
Yeah, you can't.
I can't do anything. Okay.
Without the quorum.
Did Swidzinski make it for me? Okay.
Once we have one more.
All right. Once we have a quorum, maybe we'll approve the minutes between our two bills. But we have two bills before us today, but they're substantial, so I want to get right into our committee. First up, we have House File 1369, and I'm going to move that House File 1369 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Welcome back to the committee, Representative Katiza Watoon. Please tell us about your bill.
Yeah, sir, we have an author's amendment.
Yep,
we can move that.
Great. So I'm going to move the A2 amendment.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
We don't have to wait on that. Do we have a quorum?
Oh.
We should wait.
Oh,
well,
oh yeah.
Okay. That's,
okay. So
we can hear it. But
sure, Davis is right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's just go.
We're going to move into your description of the bill. You can describe your amendment, and then we'll vote on it once we get one more person in the
door.
So thank you. Sorry for the.
Not a problem. I want to make sure that you guys get to do all the important work that you have before you today. So
thank you so much.
I will briefly describe the amendment. It's basically an expansion of the bill in order to cover children between the ages of 6 and 17. So if that's all right, Madam Chair, I will describe House File 1369 as amended, as potentially amended, and we can go back from there with any questions. But it will be a statewide comprehensive child tax credit. Many of us are familiar with the federal child tax credit that was in place through December of 2021 through the American Rescue Plan, and it made an amazing dent in childhood poverty. And without this renewed funding at the federal level, families were reporting difficulty paying for food and childcare in the months immediately following that program end. So we're talking January and February of last year, immediately after this funding ended. So now several states are considering implementing or expanding their state level credit. I began conversations on this proposal over a year ago in partnership with former chair, now Commissioner Marquardt, Chair Pinto, advocates, and I'm excited to share today what would be a massive investment in the children and families in Minnesota. House File 1369, as hopefully will be amended, will provide $3,000 annually per young child under the age of 6 and $1,000 annually per child between the ages of 6 and 17. It's a refundable credit, which makes it available to our lowest income earners. And we are also working with the Department of Revenue under Commissioner Marquardt's leadership to provide advance payments throughout the year as opposed to families receiving the funds after that tax year comes to a close. This type of program is widely supported by Americans. Almost 60% of people surveyed have supported bringing back these monthly payments, and that includes 75% of parents with children under the age of 18. Research has shown that it's especially important to support children under the age of 6 when families have the additional burden of childcare in their family budget. I know in this committee we've previously discussed the Great Start Child Care Tax Credit, which can be considered by the committee in addition to this proposal or potentially scaled to assist families at different income levels. There is no doubt that this would be a costly endeavor, but I believe, and research shows, that there is no better return on investment than investing in our Minnesotans and their families. So I appreciate your consideration and ask for your support to make Minnesota the best place for children. With that, Chair, I would love to turn it over to the testifiers.
Thank you so much, Representative Katiza Watoon, and thanks for your flexibility. Before we move to testifiers, we are just going to, now that our quorum walked in all at once, thanks for walking in, quorum. We're going to adopt the A2 amendment, and so the chair is going to move that the A2 amendment be adopted. Is there any discussion on the A2? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, please say no. All right, the A2 amendment is adopted and the bill is in the shape that the author would like. We're gonna, we'll do the minutes just in between the two bills so that we're not interrupting Representative Katiza Watoon's flow here. So first up, hello, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Efficiency, Madam Chair. Chair Gomez and members of the committee,
I'm Ryan Hamilton, Government Relations Associate for the Minnesota Catholic Conference. We support House File 1369 because direct cash transfer programs, such as child tax credits, have provided clear evidence that the tax system is an effective way to bolster family well-being. Families are the most important contributors to society. The family plays a unique role as the first economic unit, the first classroom, and the first community that each of us experience. Parents do the irreplaceable work of nurturing the next generation of thinkers, artisans, and caregivers. As you may hear from witnesses today, too many families are finding themselves in a precarious economic position. But family finance is not the only concern. Minnesota's economic system is based on population growth. Yet the state demographer has forecast almost no growth in our population in the years to come. Minnesota needs more families. If we don't get them, the state will eventually have more people who are receiving government services than paying for them. The best way to recruit new families is to send a bold policy message that their contribution is seen, valued, and supported. Only 9 other states have implemented a fully refundable child tax credit. House File 1369, as amended, would be unrivaled as the nation's leading child tax credit. It would offer tax justice to parents who may not pay a lot of income tax, but they do their part to fund government through the other taxes they pay. It would offer tax justice to working class families who are one bad life event away from dipping into poverty. It would also send a clear message to aspiring parents that they will be supported when they bring children into the world. The National Council of State Legislatures research shows that for every $1 of tax credit, it generates up to $2 in local spending as parents pay for their immediate household needs. Thank you, Rep. Katisa Watoon, for drafting this bill as boldly as you have. And we recognize that the Tax Committee's time is valuable, so thank you, Chair Gomez, for making time to discuss the CTC. And thank you, members of the committee, for bringing the economic well-being of Minnesota families to the forefront of your deliberations. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Hamilton. We appreciate your testimony. Next up, I have Yen Fasano. If you're here, you want to come up. Don't forget to introduce yourself at the beginning and then go ahead with your testimony. Thanks so much for being with us.
Is this on? Okay.
Yep, we got you.
All right. Greetings. My name is Yen Fasano, and along with my husband, Frank, we are raising 3 children, 2 of which are teenagers under 17. So I know you already feel for me. Before I share what this bill means to me personally, I wanted to say that I'm deeply grateful for the leadership here that is working on this child tax credit bill, and it is my hope that it will pass to help out families. I grew up in a single-parent household, and I vividly recall the numerous sacrifices my mom made to provide for my siblings and I. Our food consumption rotated between eggs, rice, ramen, and Spam, right? So rare were the fruits and veggies. But she always stressed that education is the most worthwhile investment in our life and the vehicle from which we could exit poverty and be contributing members of society. For my family and the many families that seek a school to partner with in the formation of our children, there are many sacrifices seen and unseen to make that happen. Most of all, most difficult are the financial strains. This bill would provide relief, but more than that, it demonstrates that the government has sensitivity, understanding, compassion towards the working class, and sends the message that it values and validates and trusts that parents are the first educators, that the choices they make are always driven by what they know is best for their child, as we strive to raise children with character, integrity, and wisdom so that they could grow in virtue and in service. I've been an educator for most of my career in inner city Chicago, Memphis, but there is no role that is harder than being a mom, striving to raise and provide for my children physically, emotionally, spiritually, as they form and grow up as adults. So we've had to get creative, like every other family, sacrificing during this pandemic and the hardships of inflation with all the causes. But they're worthwhile and they're necessary to shape future-based leaders in service to others, and that's why we invest in a Catholic education. So as parents, fellow parents here, grandparents, or perhaps you're going through the same struggles, I hope that you recall what your parents may have done for you to provide this education and that you can be a light and help for others as we daily adapt to make it work for our family, which usually always results in less given the rise in prices and everything else. So thank you for your time. I think I'm under 2 minutes, and grateful to be here.
You did great. Thank you so much for being with us. We appreciate it. Next up is Vincent Ruiz Ponce, and then Heidi Flanagan is on deck. So Heidi, if you want to come up and sit behind Mr. Ruiz Ponce, that would be good for just moving through our agenda quickly. Welcome to the committee. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you all for having me. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to all of you today. As was said, my name is Vincent Ruiz Ponce. I live in South St. Paul, Minnesota with my wife and 5 children that we work very hard every single day to raise. I would like to speak in favor of this Minnesota tax credit because I know the direct impact that it has on families like myself. We benefited immensely from the federal tax credit, which really saved us in so many different ways. I've always had a full-time job working. I work in construction now, and I work hard to support my wife and our desire for her to stay at home to be the primary educator of our children. And that means that we make a lot of sacrifices in terms of finances to make sure that she can stay home and take care of our kids. And so, like I said, we not only benefited, but really depended on the federal tax credit. It really helped us to not feel insecure about putting food on the table. And really it helps us, especially with those unplanned child expenses. You know, we work really hard. We talk about our budget probably every other week. But it's the unexpected things that you can't budget for, like needing additional bunk beds, dyslexia tutoring for some of my children, for my twins getting their version of braces at the same time. All of those things add up very quickly. And these types of tax credits really keep us out of the kind of a dangerous level of debt, credit cards, and just really help us to keep moving our family forward and ensuring that we feel confident that we're going to be able to put food on the table and give them our kids the things that they need. And so, again, just want to speak in favor of this bill, and I thank you for your time and your support.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your testimony. I think some of our members can relate with larger families when some of those unexpected expenses. I saw Representative Weiner laughing in sympathy when you talked about your 2 kids needing braces at the same time. Heidi Flanagan, thank you. I didn't mean to make the whole crew stand for so long, but thank you for joining us. Please introduce yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Hi, my name is Heidi Flanagan. My husband and I have the honor and the responsibility of raising our 7 children, ages 4 to 17. So this is a little sampling. We have lived on a single income since the birth of our firstborn, which is something that we believe has shaped our family culture to be strong, resilient, and beautiful. My husband loves working for a small nonprofit, and I get to stay home full time to homeschool each of our children. We call ourselves tightwads, but as thrifty as we have been, we've not been able to get out of our financial debt. Beside the normal expenses of feeding and caring for a large family, we also have those unexpected expenses. Our son, Matthias, for example, had 6 ear surgeries in 18 months and now has a cochlear implant so he can hear. Each of our children, though, has their unique talents and challenges that we're trying to nurture and form so that they will grow to contribute to the common good. Hopefully, they will grow up to live and work in Minnesota, raising families of their own. We've been really intentional about where and how we spend our money and have worked hard to raise our children well. We request financial aid wherever we go so that our children can participate in programs that we think are worthwhile. However, the financial stress is very real for us. I can tell from across the room when my husband is paying the bills, just by the way he looks. It is shocking even to shop at Aldi's and Goodwill and see the price tags. Our monthly house mortgage, as you can imagine, compares with our monthly food bill, and each month our food bill actually goes higher and higher above our mortgage. It would be incredibly helpful to have the financial resources available in raising our family, working towards financial freedom as we continue to do, and this proposed bill would launch us leaps and bounds to being debt-free. On behalf of our family and so many others, thank you for introducing this bill to support us hardworking families. Thank you for your time, and I wish you each well.
Thank you so much for your testimony, and thanks, everyone, for joining us. We appreciate it. Next up is Ryan Richardson, and then Jessica Webster. You're on deck after that. Welcome to the committee. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you. You're welcome. Good afternoon. My name is Ryan Richardson. I'm the father of four young children, and we are also on a single income. We're a single income family. I work, and my wife stays home with our children. As you've heard so far, I'll echo, she has the harder of the two jobs. We do okay. We don't qualify for any government support, and rightly so. But that doesn't mean we don't struggle. We've put off buying a car, a new used car, for 2 years, and which we sorely need. And my cost of living adjustment this year was well below the rate of inflation, which particularly hasn't kept up with the price of groceries. Now, this might sound a little trivial, but what parent out there doesn't want their kids to eat more vegetables and maybe some fruits and not gripe about it? My kids love bell peppers, especially the red ones. They eat them up as fast as they can get them. And at dinner, there's no bickering or scolding or bargaining over a dessert if bell peppers are what they're being asked to eat. For snacks, they love the Minnesota's own Honeycrisp apple. They over salty snacks or chips or other junk foods. If you've been to the grocery store lately, and I was this morning, one red bell pepper is $2.25, and one Honeycrisp apple is $2.99. What this tax credit would mean is that parents like me, middle-class parents, wouldn't have to hesitate about putting the fruits and vegetables that their kids enjoy and love into the shopping cart. I strongly encourage you to support this bill, and I think I speak for many parents when I say it will help keep dinner time pleasant rather than having to go to canned asparagus.
Ooh,
I love
canned asparagus. That's
it's delicious.
Everyone besides Representative Davids is horrified.
Madam Chair, this is not my first bill before the committee, but otherwise I would have brought some canned asparagus for everyone.
Thank you so much for joining us, Ms. Webster. Please introduce yourself and go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jessica Webster. I'm a staff attorney with Legal Aid. I use she, her pronouns, and Legal Aid represents low-income families and families and kids experiencing poverty and hardship statewide. I want to thank Representative Katiza Watoon for bringing the bill and Chair Gomez for creating the space for the conversation. And I just want to point, to abbreviate my testimony, I want to point to a letter in the packet that we are part of a group of groups of and coalitions of about 45 and growing that are really, really excited and enthusiastic about a state-based child tax credit. There's some design principles in that letter that we have pointed to that you can read, and we like it because it's transformative, it's going to dent child poverty, and it has the potential to really tackle racial disparities in a really aggressive and meaningful way. And with that, I'll defer to my friends at the Children's Defense Fund.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Webster. Yes, please check out the letter in your packet, members. It's a really large coalition you guys have put together, so thank you for that. Welcome to the committee.
Hi, my name is Deb Fitzpatrick, and I'm the Director of Policy and Research at Children's Defense Fund, Minnesota. Thank you, Representative Katiza Watoon, Chair Gomez, members of the committee, for this opportunity to come before you on behalf of the estimated 322,000 Minnesota children living in the state's lowest income families that lost access to the full value of the federal child tax credit when Congress failed to continue the 2021 expansions. And that's important because the research tells us that a small amount of flexible cash support can make a surprisingly large difference for children living with the chronic stress and instability that results from having parents working in low-wage sectors of our economy. The National Academy of Science finds that modest boosts in income, parental income, especially during a child's first years, have striking associations with that child's future school and employment success. In 2021, over 138,000 Minnesota children were living in poverty, a number that has undoubtedly grown significantly as the full impacts of the federal CTC rollback are, as well as household expenses and income inequality growth. growing are being born out in our families and in our communities. That's enough children to fill the Twin Stadium more than three times over. That's how many Minnesota kids, disproportionately from our Black, Indigenous, Latinx, and other communities of color, that have the deck unnecessarily stacked against them. Policies like a state CTC that increase access to flexible cash alongside public programs that reduce expenses like housing, food, or childcare are an efficient and effective way to help remove barriers to economic stability and life success. An income-targeted, fully refundable state CTC of around $1,000 could cut child poverty in Minnesota by 25%. I hope we will not turn our backs on those stadiums filled with children when we know what to do and have the money to do it. Thank you for your time today and for all you're doing for Minnesota's children.
Thank you very much. We appreciate the testimony. We're going to move to member discussion shortly here. I just wanted to, before we do that, just to thank everybody who testified and everybody who's joining us today. We don't often get like a lot of visitors from the community and the tax committee. I'm just going to be honest. We have a lot of people who are paid to be here. No offense to any of them. We're happy to have them too, but we like it when the community comes and shares their words with us. It helps us do our job better, and so we appreciate it. Thank you for being here. Okay, so we are going to go to Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have a question, or should I offer my amendment first?
Up to you.
How about we just offer the amendment first?
Sounds good.
So I have the A3 amendment, Madam Chair, and I'd like to offer that to the bill. So one of the words that we heard, I believe it was Lisa Wajun spoke a little bit, how it's good to potentially rush these dollars to families. And, you know, one of the areas we do often hear about is birth costs and the cost of preparing for a child. And this amendment would really help rush the dollars to families. It would get them, if they're choosing to have the child, so that they could benefit from a tax perspective for carrying the child. And that's what the amendment does, and I'd hope the author would potentially accept it as a friendly amendment, friendly to families, and go from there. So.
All right, Representative Swedzinski has moved the A3 amendment, so we're moving to discussion on the amendment. I would go to the author of the bill, Representative Katiza Mattoon.
Thank you, Chair Gomez, and Representative Swedzinski, I appreciate you recognizing the urgency in making sure that we get this support to families as soon as possible. I think that we agree on making sure that we get support to families in any way possible. I don't agree necessarily that this amendment is the way to do it on this bill, but I'm on the Children and Families Committee. We're doing a lot of work to make sure that we're helping pregnant people as they move through that prenatal period, offering home visiting, early Head Start options, SNAP, TANF provisions, and making sure that pregnant people have access to nutritional foods with those sorts of federal supports as well. And so I would ask members to vote no on this amendment. I think there's a lot that we can do together moving forward on paid family and medical leave, just making sure that parents have that time and some additional support in the immediate days after birth. But I think that we should focus on birth through age 17 at this point in this bill.
Thank you, Representative Katiza Wattoon. Is there any further discussion on the A3? Representative Olson, B.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just, give you a personal story. So I have a little one who's due on the 17th of March. So I'm running into a little under, about 6 weeks now, and I'm a little nervous about that. This will be my third one. And I think that if this amendment were to go onto the books, that would have benefited someone who's falling into my category, because before December 31st, we would have hit that 28 weeks scenario. And this would have been incredibly beneficial to my family in particular, who is in no way, shape, or form phenomenally wealthy. We're okay. We're doing just fine. We're incurring a lot of increased costs with regards to food and childcare and all these kind of things that we're discussing regularly here in this tax committee, especially, but as a state entirely. We've incurred thousands of dollars worth of expenses over the past couple months preparing for this child, and it's our third one. So we have a girl who's 5. We have a boy who's 3. We're going to have a girl. We don't have to buy any extra clothes because we were able to save all that stuff. But there are things like car seats that are no longer viable. They tell you that you need to recycle and get a new car seat due to the new standards and licenses. So we have a new car seat that we purchased. We have prenatal vitamins that are very expensive to perform, make sure that our kid has the best possible chance going on into the future. And it doesn't start the day the baby is born. It starts on day 1, which is approximately 9 months before the baby is born. And so when we're looking at an amendment like this, if we're truly trying to help families, if we're truly trying to provide these children with their best possible scenario in which to thrive, this is something that is necessary. And it's not talking about, you know, in the future helping, you know, in some early childhood committee. It is here right now today in order to ensure that our families in the state of Minnesota have the absolute best chance. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. Is there any further discussion from members on the A3? Well, maybe I'll say something just briefly about taxes, and then we'll go to you and see, or I don't know if Carly, if you have anything else you need to say, but we'll just let you have the final word, if that's
ahead.
Okay. I just want to say that sometimes I feel like it's my responsibility to be the tax scold. I've referred to myself as that before. So there are many places, many ways that the tax code, many benefits that get extended to children in the tax code and to parents in the tax code. And there is no precedent that I'm aware of for extending those benefits for children to those unborn child with a gestational age, as is outlined in this amendment. And so it would be pretty unprecedented. So I just wanted to say that first is just that this would be kind of diverging pretty significantly from the way that kind of tax policy benefits for children are extended to parents, which, of course, as any of us who've had kids know, is not to say that there aren't expenses, obviously, that are incurred, in the course of pregnancy. But I just wanted to say that. But Representative Swedzinski, any final
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Oftentimes we hear, we have to be leaders. And I know the state of Oklahoma, I believe, is a state that does offer some of these tax benefits for child that are still in utero. And so there wouldn't be, we wouldn't be breaking totally new ground. But, I think when we're focusing and looking at these issues, like we heard from the testimony, I think, getting these dollars in the parents' hands as soon as possible. This isn't a pro-life, pro-choice question amendment at all. It's just whether or not we really want to just focus these dollars in as soon as possible. So Representative Olson kind of spoke a little bit about his circumstance. If you think about that, how it would potentially work is to say, his bride is so far along. If that taxable date, she's at 28 weeks, December 25th, that family would be able to enjoy the fruits of that tax benefit for one extra year. And so you can imagine, and that's probably the most gainful years, those early years by the bill, the way it's structured. If it was $3,000 throughout the whole entire bill, which would be, $3,000, I think it's $3,001 through 6, and then beyond that it's $1,000. That's one of the most intense years where families could participate. And I think the quicker and longer families can participate in those early years of this benefit, most definitely benefits families. And if we're trying to make a difference with life and preserving it as far as from a taxable structure, I think it's a wise one. And I feel pretty passionate about that. I appreciate Representative Olson. I appreciate the families out there that testified and taking your times out of your day and even pulling a kid out of school, which I'm sure some of them appreciate. But I would like a roll call. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Roll call having been requested, there will be a roll call on the A3. We usually go to the author last, but we're going to go to Representative Joy and then see if you have any closing comments, although you kind of just closed us up nice. But Representative Joy, please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Swinsky, for bringing this forward. As we heard testimony today from the people in the crowd, they told us that they're at home homeschooling. They want to get out of debt. They want to see the future look better for them. And I agree with this. If you can get them a kickstart and get in this rebate a year earlier, and say they have seven kids, now they're going to their eighth or their third kid. This helps them. This gives them a headway even before, and I think this is a great amendment because it gives them the planning process when they have their burden already. They know that, hey, I have a year ahead of time. I'm getting this. I think it's a great amendment. I just want to say that I appreciate Representative Swinsky bringing this forward. And I think it's a good bill, but I think this amendment would be great with it, too. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Joy. Representative Smith.
thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say I think I learned a trick from previous Chair David's last time. I'm not going to speak to intents, but if I was going to speak to intents, I would say I really like the intent of this bill or this amendment. I think the idea that we do need to help people who are preparing for a family, preparing for a child is really, really important. I just think, and the reason I'm going to vote no on this amendment is that this is not the right bill for this. I think it does bring in some very complicated questions about fetal personhood. Why are we putting 28 weeks here? As Representative Olson, you know, mentioned, from day one, you have incur costs when you're having a new child. So I'd be happy to work on a potential bill of, you know, a new family credit or something along those lines to kind of figure out how we can best do that. So I just want to be clear that voting no on this amendment is not in any way voting no on the intent or what you talked about here. So I appreciate that, and I just thought that would be helpful to say before the roll call.
Thank you, Representative Smith. So since we had a couple other members, we're maybe just going to go to the author and then the author of the amendment to close us out, just to reground us, please. Thank you. Representative Katizawatun.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for sharing your thoughts on the amendment. I think that Representative Smith said it really well. I appreciate the intent of the amendment. I think it's critical that we support families, particularly pregnant people in the prenatal stages of life. I just don't think that this bill, expanding this bill in this way, is the right way to go. But I certainly would appreciate insight and support on other proposals that we could move forward with on a bipartisan basis. Representative Swedzinski did bring up Oklahoma and some of the different differences that they may have in their existing child credit. They are one of 10 states that currently offer a statewide child credit, which I think is really important, but it's non-refundable. They only give, I think, $100 a year. So I'm not sure, I mean, I'm again not gonna ask specifically the question, but I think if parents were choosing between a potential of $3,000 in Minnesota after the birth of their child as a young child, or if they, you know, want to move to Oklahoma and only get $100 a year, I think that that choice is pretty clear, and I think that we're moving forward with a nation-leading tax credit in this form. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Katizawatun. Representative Smithinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to represent Smith, you know, I do appreciate, let's have a conversation about this, you know, and I would, you know, if it would gain any support, you know, I'd be happy to, you know, extend it beyond, you know, earlier than 28 weeks, if, you know, a month along, I'd be open to that. But I thought, you know, 28 would potentially be a good middle ground, but I am open to moving that up through the gestational period. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Swedzinski. I'm not seeing any further discussion on the A3, so the clerk will take the roll. The chair votes no.
Chair Gomez, no. Vice Chair Norris.
No.
Vice Chair Norris, no. Lead Davids.
Yes.
Lead Davids, yes. Representative Egbaje.
No.
Representative Egbaje, no. Representative Anderson, excused. Representative Brand. Representative Brand, no. Representative Elkins.
Elkins, no.
Representative Elkins, no. Representative Howard.
No.
Representative Howard, no. Representative Joy.
Aye.
Representative Joy, aye. Representative Kosnick.
Aye.
Representative Kosnick, aye. Representative Lee.
No.
Representative Lee, no. Representative Lislegarde, excused. Representative Olson, B.
Yes.
Representative Olson B, yes. Representative Olson L.
No.
Representative Olson L, no. Representative Pinto.
No.
Representative Pinto, no. Representative Robbins.
Aye.
Representative Robbins, aye. Representative Smith.
No.
Representative Smith, no. Representative Swedzinski.
Aye.
Representative Swedzinski, aye. Representative Wiener.
Yes.
Representative Wiener, yes. Representative Witte.
Yes.
Representative Witte, yes. Representative Youakim?
No.
Representative Youakim, no. There are 8 ayes and 11 nays.
There being 8 ayes and 11 nays, the A3 does not pass and is not adopted. I don't know if you have any final or, I'm sorry, to general discussion of the bill. How about let's do that too? Sorry. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Katisa Watun, for bringing this bill. I have a question for you or maybe for staff, but I wondered first, at what income threshold, because I didn't see it in the fiscal note, is the phase out complete? And because I'm assuming then when the phase out's complete, people would take the deduction that's already in law. And then secondly, does this count as income? So then how would that impact people's SNAP benefits? So would this, I didn't see again in the fiscal note, if this would actually take some people off SNAP benefits because of this. So if someone could address that.
Representative Katisa Watun, I'm happy to go to Mr. Williams. It looked like he moved his microphone a little closer to him.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think Mr. Williams can maybe address the first part of the question, yeah. And I'm happy to address the second part.
Great. So let's go first to Mr. Williams.
Chair Gomez and Representative Robbins. So the income at which the phase-out would be complete would depend on the taxpayer's filing status and then also the age of their children and how many children there are. So the credit is reduced by 10% of adjusted gross income above the phase-out threshold. So for someone who claims the credit for young children at $3,000, it would be reduced essentially over $30,000. Potentially a taxpayer with more kids or kids, they get the $1,000 credit for older children. It would be phased out at sort of different places. So it sort of defends taxpayer to taxpayer in terms of where it's fully phased out. But generally, it's about $30,000 per young kid and $10,000 per older child.
Representative Robbins.
Sorry, Madam Chair. Is it possible to get some sort of like average run on that or something so we could look at it, or is it too technical to get in the weeds like that?
Mr. Williams.
Chair Gomez and Representative Robbins. So we have data on the number of qualifying children for the federal child credit that we can do modeling on. However, that data doesn't account for the ages of the children. And because the bill's credit sort of varies depending on the age of the child, I don't think we can get detailed modeling on that. DOR might be able to.
Representative Robbins, anything further? Okay, thank you. Is there any further discussion on the bill? Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to play the type here and just emphasize the young child part of this, as long as I have the opportunity. And just note for members that when your kids are little, that's the time in your life, the research shows, when you have the least savings and the lowest income you're ever going to have and the worst credit scores you're ever going to have. And as one of the economists who taught this to me says, past income, that's past income, current income, future income, that's all the income. That's all you got. And so we know there's such a big payoff from that age. And so I really, I'm really grateful, Representative Katisa Watun, for the emphasis. And if folks are kind of thinking, we're emphasizing much more for that age than for others and just recognizing how much more we're spending in other areas. I, too, as Representative Smith said, I found the amendment intriguing just in thinking about how can we provide support for pregnant people, especially people with newborns, and thinking about the timing and how do you structure this to get into people's hands. That's a really challenging time of life for folks. I will note that one really huge thing we know is paid family medical leave, people being with their kids for those first 12 weeks. We know in Canada that's 12 months and things are going really well there and it's all fine. But in any case, so I do think what that makes me think is there's a bunch of tools that we have maybe to address what the amendment's trying to address. This seems like it could be a really powerful tool in emphasizing it for those younger kids when families are really at sea and yet we know it's that huge impact. That's really good stuff. So thanks for your work on this. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Yes. Thank you, Representative Pinto. Representative Katisa Watun.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to briefly address the second part of Representative Robbins' question before we continue. So you asked about counting toward income and that how that may impact families qualifying for other federal benefits. So that is something that has been brought to my attention with the advocates. I did speak with former Chair Commissioner Marquardt about that in process, and so that's something that we certainly want to look at. We're considering if there may be a lower number of advance payments that might help us work around that. It's certainly something that, you know, it's, that would be an unintended consequence, and we want to make sure if there's additional language that we can frame up in the bill. I don't know if Mr. Williams has anything to add on that at this point, but I do appreciate you for flagging that because it is something that we are working on.
Yeah, my apologies for not letting you answer the second part of Representative Robbins' question, but I appreciate it, and you know, this bill's going to be laid over, and so thank you so much for flagging that issue, and we'll see if there are, you know, kind of ways that we can craft it to make sure that that doesn't happen. Representative Robbins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Katisa Watoon. And my last question, somewhat related to this, is on those advance payments then. I'm no longer on the Judiciary Committee, but I put in 4 years over there, and just wondering if there would also be some opportunity to include language about audit trails or reports on how this is going, because I think other committees might have some concerns that there's, you know, that's not mentioned or, can, you know, addressed in the bill at this point. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Robbins. I don't know.
I think the committee can certainly consider that as you move forward.
I've never heard audit trails in tax committee, but maybe we need to start talking about them. I don't know. We'll work on it. Thank you so much for that, Representative Robbins. Just going back to discussion on the bill, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm an equal opportunity. I like the intent of this bill, but not sure about the overall intent with this one. I've talked to you about this, Representative Tizu-Tum. First of all, just sympathetic to everything we've heard from you, from testifiers, the immense need to make sure that families are able to not just afford their lives, but thrive within their lives. And incredibly important, I'm just not sure if the tool, as Rep. Pinto called it, of tax credits are generally the best way of this, because everything we're spending on this tax credit, we're not spending on expanding services. And, you know, we're laying this over, so we don't have to decide today, but I definitely think there's a lot of things that, you know, $4 billion a year gives us a lot of services, gets us closer to universal health care. Maybe we're going to talk on the floor tonight about universal meals at breakfast and lunch. Maybe we can do that for dinner with this money. So there's a lot of ways that we can address potentially these really, really important issues. So, again, I'm saying this is wonderful, the intent, but as we look at the larger tax omnibus, this is going to be obviously a huge price tag with a couple other things we have. So I don't know. I felt compelled to say that I love this, what this does, and the idea of helping families in a really hard time, but hesitant to not put this towards services and just tax relief. So just general comment.
Thank you, Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, or go whatever.
Well, I'll add you to the list.
Okay, go to the list, yeah.
Representative Koznick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering if maybe we could get a little bit of walkthrough or better explanation to help me understand, maybe some others, how the credit is reduced by 10% as gross income goes, say, for a couple over $150,000. How, just the mechanics of it, a little explanation so I can follow a little better.
To Mr. Williams.
Thank you.
Chair Gomez and Representative Koznick, it's pretty typical of how we draft phase outs in the income tax. So you sort of say what the threshold for the phase out is, and then sort of how much of each dollar over that threshold your credit gets reduced by. So in this case, if you have $1,000, your adjusted gross income is $151,000, it'd be 10% of that amount, so your credit would be reduced by $100. So it's kind of like saying $100 for each $1,000 of income, but rather than being kind of a stair-step pattern, it's more of a smooth phase out.
Representative Koznick.
That's very helpful. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to some comments that were made by the speaker before, Representative Koznick. I didn't mention any names.
I noticed.
Pretty,
well
pretty,
done.
Never underestimate my sneakiness.
But
sneakiness. Well, you can talk all you want. in the tax here, I mean, this is a huge price tag on this. I'm not saying it's good or bad or indifferent. I hope that our committee will be hearing all bills for what they are. When I was tax chair back in the day, we heard we might have had a tax bill of X, and it was the cost for the bills we heard were about three times that. So you're going to get a target. You'll have a target. I think we should hear the bills as they are. And, yes, this is a huge one. It's not going to be at this price. We know that. I mean, taking money from education and healthcare and nursing homes, things like that. So there's going to be a lot of competition, and we do have quite a few funds, but there's going to be a lot of competition. And so I hope this committee will not be saying, well, that busts the budget or something like that, because I think we just need to hear everything, and then we'll put it together, or you'll put it together at the end, and then we'll go visit with the Senate.
Thank you, Representative Davis. Is there any further discussion? I'm not seeing any from members, so we'll go to Representative Katiza Watoon for some closing comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for your insightful and earnest opinions today on this bill. I think specifically to Representative David's comments, I think that that makes a lot of sense. I know I do take very seriously any way that we can support children and families, and I know that this would be a massive investment on its own. We do have lots of bills to consider in this committee, as you do, and then in all the other committees this year, and so I think that we can stitch and weave together some really amazing and wonderful benefits for our littlest Minnesotans and their families, and really make a big improvement upon the everyday lives of Minnesotans. So thank you so much for your consideration. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Representative Katiza Watoon, for being back in front of the committee. So with that, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 1369, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the tax omnibus bill. Thank you, Representative Katiza Watoon. Next up is Representative Lee. Oh, minutes. Thank you so much. I wrote it on my paper and everything. Thank you, Representative Lee. Okay. Representative Brand, would you like to move the minutes since Representative Norris walked out at that moment?
I guess I'm the pitch hitter on this.
That's right.
Absolutely. I would like to move the minutes from the last meeting.
Excellent. So Representative Brand has moved the minutes for February 7th, 2023. Is there any discussion on the motion? Not seeing any. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No. Motion carries, and the minutes from the February 7th, 2023 are adopted. Thank you so much, Representative Lee. If we're going to hear next on the agenda is House File 1400. So, Representative Lee, welcome to your committee. This is your first bill in front of the Tax Committee, isn't it?
This is definitely
exciting day, and you brought treats and everything, I'm sure. So nobody's going to haze you. Oh, no. Wait, I didn't... Just to be clear, Representative Davids, I wasn't entertaining a discussion about the nature or quality of the treats, because if they have dried fruit, like, does it not count as treats, Representative Davids?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I didn't come here to graze at the salad bar. It's wonderful. It's all wonderful. But I would like the canned asparagus.
Thank you so much. For the new members, Representative Davids prefers pastries and canned asparagus as his treat. We're all going to make note of that moving forward.
Good to know. I was hoping Representative Olson would bring the donuts, he promised.
That's on Wednesday. That's next Wednesday. Right?
Okay.
Next Wednesday, Olson. Madam Chair. Next
okay.
Wednesday.
Excellent. Thank you.
Didn't want to steal your thunder.
Great. To your bill, Representative... Oh, sorry. Representative Lee is going to move that House File 1400 be laid over in the omnibus tax bill, and I believe that you have a DE amendment.
Yes, I have a DE1 amendment and like to move to adopt the amendment to get the bill in the shape that I'd like.
All right, Representative Lee has moved her DE1. Is there any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, the motion is adopted, and the DE1 author's amendment is adopted, and the bill's in the form the author would wish. So please present your bill.
Great. Thank you, Chair Gomez and colleagues of the Tax Committee. As you may recall, I am Representative Liz Lee. This is my first bill. Thank you for entertaining this proposal. I'm pleased to present before you today House File 1400 as amended, which would allow taxpayers to file with an individual tax identification number, commonly known as an ITINs, to receive Minnesota's Working Family Tax Credit. But before I continue, I do want to take a moment to thank everyone who has been working so hard on this proposal, some for many years. I'm just carrying it this year, so I want to thank Chair Gomez, our research staff and nonpartisan staff, past and present, as well as the advocates in the audience who are here with us. I know not all of you will be able to testify, so I just want to highlight all the work that's been done.
to really stress how important it is that our legislative body fixes inequity this year. And it's so important that's also in the governor's budget. So really appreciate the chair giving us the space to have the hearing. For those of you who need the background, House File 1400, as amended, would ensure that all eligible working families across the state of Minnesota who duly pay their taxes are allowed to claim a credit that they deserve. Simply put, if a person is contributing to the economic well-being of our state, they should also be entitled to tap into programs designed to promote the economic security of all of our communities. And so, with that, I'm going to yield my time to the witnesses that we have signed up, and then I can fill in the blanks as we close at the end.
Great. Thank you so much, Representative Lee. So we have a number of testifiers. First up, we're going to call up Assistant Commissioner John Kloxheim. Thank you for joining us, Assistant Commissioner. Welcome back to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good afternoon, members. For the record, my name is John Kloxheim, Assistant Commissioner at the Department of Revenue, and I'm here to testify in support of Representative Lee's bill, House File 1400. As you may know, Governor Walz has also included something similar to the working family credit expansion that's included in this bill, and that would allow taxpayers to file with an ITIN rather than simply with a Social Security number. The Working Family Credit provides working families a refundable tax credit to help with many of the financial constraints they face. This program is an important source of financial stability for low and moderate income working families. So an ITIN, as many of you know, is an identification number that is issued by the IRS, and taxpayers use that to file and pay their taxes. We know that many of these families already are working and paying their taxes. For example, for tax year 2018, we had over 26,000 individuals pay taxes of $30 million. So it's already happening, but they cannot take advantage of this credit. This credit would reduce poverty and economic hardship for these families and their children and contribute to a more equitable tax system. So what we're looking for, and you've seen it in the estimate, there's about 9,000 taxpayers that would benefit under this bill with an average credit of $1,087. I want to thank you, Madam Chair, for bringing this bill before committee, and we look forward to working with the committee as it goes forward.
Thank you very much for joining us, Assistant Commissioner Kloxheim. Next up, Nick Howders, Heredia Rosario, please come up, introduce yourself for the record, and go ahead with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Chair Gomez and members of the Taxes Committee. My name is Nick Howders Heredia Rosario. I am the Legislative and Policy Director for the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs. I am here today on behalf of the Council to express our support for House File 1400 as amended to expand the working family credit to include taxpayers who file using an ITIN number. This bill represents an opportunity to support low and middle income families and move towards a more equitable tax code system while also recognizing while also sending the message that ITIN filers' contribution to the state of Minnesota is valuable. As a state agency, the council advises and informs elected officials about the needs of the Latino community. And based on our work, we have seen the significant impact that financial insecurity and the rising cost of living, as you know, have had on our families. Last summer, the council conducted listening sessions across Minnesota to listen to the needs of Latino Minnesotans. One of the key issues that was raised constantly throughout the conversation was the disparity in access to tax credit, to the state tax credit. This feedback echoed what we have heard in the past, indicating that this is a persistent and pressing issue that affects many members of the Latino community here in the state. ITIN filers play a vital role as workers, business owners, taxpayers, and community members, and they contribute to the funding of our public services. yet they are excluded from many programs and benefits. The council supports, House File 1400 would allow to close this gap, making the program more inclusive and increasing its impact. As it was mentioned, this would allow roughly 9,000 taxpayers to qualify for this benefit. This expansion also would inject more money into our economy, helping to stimulate growth. The council strongly supports House File 1400 as amended, and we encourage this committee to vote on this important legislation that would take a step forward towards creating a more equitable and inclusive Minnesota. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Ms. Heredia Rosario, for joining us today. Next up, we have Mauricia. You want to come up? Just need one, grab an extra chair, maybe. Thank you. Bienvenidos, Mauricia, a la comité.
Hi, mi nombre es Mauricia Vidales. Soy líder con Unidos Minnesota y soy dueña de un pequeño negocio. Hoy quiero testificar a favor.
Madam Chair, I don't understand what she's saying. Is there an interpreter?
Yes.
Or is there a...
She's right here.
Yeah, so sorry, I should have mentioned that before we had this testifier go ahead. So Ms. Lopez is joining as the interpreter.
Oh,
so I
thank you.
Mauricio is going to read a chunk and then we're going to go to the interpretation. Thank you. Sorry about that. Go ahead.
Hoy quiero testificar a favor de HF 1400. Llegué a Estados Unidos hace 18 años y a Minnesota hace 7 años porque quería un mejor futuro para mis hijos.
Hello. My name is Madam Chair. My name is Mauricia Vidales, and I'm a leader with Unidos Minnesota. I'm a small business owner. I'm here to testify in favor of HF 1400. I moved to the United States 18 years ago and came to Minnesota 7 years ago because I wanted a better future for my children.
Yo sabía que en Minnesota había la oportunidad de tener una mejor vida y sabíamos que aquí podríamos lograr el sueño americano. Todos los años que hemos vivido aquí, hemos vivido en departamentos y jamás pudiera imaginar ser dueña de mi casa propia por lo cara que son, en especial con dos hijos. Mi esposo y yo tuvimos que tener hasta dos trabajos.
I knew Minnesota held the opportunity for a better life and that we could achieve the American dream here. The entire time we live in the U.S., we live in apartments, and honestly, I did never imagine owning a home because of how expensive they are, especially with two kids. My husband and I had to work many, many jobs just to survive.
Estoy orgullosa de decir que mi hija fue al colegio sin ayuda de nadie y con mucho esfuerzo. Estoy orgullosa de decir que soy minnesotana y cada año, como todos los dueños de negocios, me preparo para hacer mis taxes. Como dueña de negocios y trabajadora, soy responsable de llenar mi tax return porque todos tenemos que pagar para lograr el Minnesota que merecemos. He estado pagando taxes aquí por muchos años. Me siento bien pagando porque yo contribuyo a que Minnesota sea un mejor lugar para todos, incluyendo mis hijos.
I am proud to say I put my daughter through college on my own with a lot of effort. I am proud to say I'm a Minnesotan, and every year, like any other Minnesotan and any other business owner, I prepare for tax season. As a business owner, as a worker, I responsibly file my tax return because I know that it takes all of us to build the Minnesota we deserve, and all of us must pay our fair share. I have been paying taxes here for many years, and I feel good paying because I'm contributing to making Minnesota a better place for everybody, including my two daughters.
En 2018, la Cámara de Comercio de Minnesota calculó que los trabajadores con ITIN pagaron $300 millones en impuestos al Estado y $191 millones al gobierno federal. Minnesotanos como yo que hacen sus taxes con ITIN no califican para el Working Family Credit, no calificamos para el Property Tax Credit y minnesotanos como yo que llenamos taxes federales con ITIN no calificamos para el Earned Income Credit.
According to a 2018 estimate from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, ITIN workers paid about $300 million in taxes in Minnesota, $108 million to the state, and $191 million to the federal government. Minnesotans like me, who file taxes with an ITIN, do not qualify for the Working Family Credit or a property tax credit. And Minnesotans like me, who federal tax returns with tax identification numbers do not qualify for the federal earned income credit.
Mi familia y otras familias con un ITIN trabajan duro para sobrevivir. Toda la pandemia de COVID trabajamos para mantener el Estado funcionando y seguir adelante. Hoy quiero pedirles que apoyen a las familias con ITIN y expandan el Working Family Tax Credit. Hoy les pido que apoyen el HF 1400. Gracias.
And this is the final part. My family and other ITIN working families work hard to make ends meet. And through the COVID pandemic, we worked really hard to keep the state running and moving forward. Today, I want you to ask to support ITIN working families by expanding the working family tax credit. Today, I ask you to support HF 1400. Thank you.
Thank you. Muchísimas gracias por estar con nosotros hoy y su testimonio. Next up, Vina Ayer. And then Irma Marquez Trapero is right after Vina or Ms. Ayer. Welcome to the committee. Ms. Ayer, we know each other as a sort of immigration advocates, but she just told me outside a secret, which is that taxes was her favorite class in law school, so she's a fellow traveler. So welcome to the committee. Thank you for being with us.
That was supposed to remain a secret.
I know it's embarrassing to admit that you're interested in tax policy. We all know the pain.
Thank you so much, Chair Gomez, Lee Davids, Representative Lee, and committee members. I'm Vina Ayer, and the Executive Director of the Immigrant Law Center of Minnesota. ILCM is a statewide nonprofit organization providing legal representation, education, and advocacy to low-income immigrants and refugees. We are proud to serve the community through Minnesota offices in Austin, Moorhead, St. Paul, Worthington, and with the recent addition of a staff member in St. James. We submit this testimony in support of HF 1400, which ensures that otherwise eligible Minnesotan tax filers can access the Working Family Tax Credit. Specifically, the bill allows taxpayers who use individual tax identification numbers, or ITINs, or who have spouses or dependents who use ITINs to obtain the Working Family Tax Credit. I think one of the main reasons I'm before the committee is for this next part of my testimony, which is, what is an ITIN and who are ITIN holders? The ITIN was created to allow foreign nationals and other individuals who are not eligible for a Social Security number to file taxes. Many immigrants have ITINs. Yes, people who do not have a lawful status in the United States may obtain an ITIN. But other people who are lawfully present in this country but who may not be eligible for a Social Security number also can obtain an ITIN. These individuals include a foreign national who has been legally residing in the United States who, based on the number of days in the country, is filing a U.S. tax return, a foreign national who is a student, professor, or researcher in the United States and is filing a U.S. tax return but does not qualify to receive a Social Security number, a dependent or spouse of a U.S. citizen or lawful permanent resident, or a dependent or spouse of a foreign national on a temporary visa. So who would benefit from this change to the Working Family Tax Credit? All Minnesotans. Let's take the example of an immigrant worker in the resort, landscaping, agriculture, or construction industries who is helping to mitigate the labor shortages in those industries here in Minnesota and who is the mom of two children. She works, she pays her taxes, and she contributes to our economy as a worker and as a consumer. But if she has an ITIN, or even if she has a Social Security number as a taxpayer, but her children have ITINs, she cannot claim the Working Family Tax Credit. The Department of Revenue estimates that if this bill is adopted, newly qualifying families could claim an average Working Family Tax Credit of $1,000 per year. That is a month's rent, the out-of-pocket costs of a medical emergency, or a car repair, all of which would make a tremendous difference in the lives of this family, support the mom to continue to work in the community, and provide cash to the mom's local landlord, healthcare provider, or mechanic keeping money in the community. We therefore urge the passage of HF 1400, which corrects a fundamental inequity in Minnesota tax law and promotes prosperity for all Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Iyer. We would ask you to just stick around in case there's any questions that we need your assistance with later. Next up is Irma Marquez Trapero. Welcome to the committee. Please just introduce yourself at the beginning and go ahead with your testimony. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair Gomez and members of the committee. My name is Irma Marquez Trapero, and I am the Executive Director of Latino Lead. At Latino Lead, we envision a world where Latinx community members are civically engaged, connected, supported, and seen as the vital force of influence in Minnesota. I'm here today to testify in favor of this proposal. As a daughter of hardworking immigrant parents who have ITIN numbers, I strongly support efforts to remove arbitrary and truly inequitable barriers that keep otherwise eligible Minnesotanos and Minnesotans like my parents from accessing elements of our tax code simply because they use a federal individual taxpayer identification number, ITIN, for tax purposes instead of a social security number due to their immigration status. I am an adult now, but as a child, my parents and my single mom, I should say, would have been income eligible for working family tax credit if they had been allowed to participate in such program. However, they instead ended up paying more taxes than their neighbors that didn't use ITIN when filing their taxes. We need to ensure that working families do not continue to overpay if they do not have to, merely because they use an ITIN number. This shows that, or according to the IRS, in 2015, 4.5 million ITIN filers paid over $5.5 billion in payroll and Medicare taxes and $23.6 billion in total taxes. This shows that ITIN filers are fully contributors of our tax base, our economy, and our workforce. Allowing them to participate in the state's working family tax credit is a matter of fairness and an investment in our current and future workforce in Minnesota, as well as inclusion of our immigrant communities. As we all know, eligibility for the working family tax credit families and individuals must be part of low-income households, and we cannot leave any filer behind. It is estimated that each eligible return filer with an ITIN will receive a credit of roughly $1,000. This would make a real difference for these low-income households. I know it could have for my case. It can mean the difference between getting a car fixed or simply saving for future needs. ITINs can improve long-term U.S. economic growth and productivity by channeling key tax credits, particularly to families with citizen children. It is very simple. Including immigrants in this program is fiscally and morally responsible, and at the end of the day, it boosts our economic growth by lifting the human capital and the overall well-being of their families like mine, and therefore future generations of our workforce in Minnesota. As I stated before, I am here in support of this proposal, and I urge all members of this committee to be supportive as well. We thank the bill authors for introducing these very important policies and for a more equitable tax code here in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Marquez Trapero, for joining us today and for sharing your story of your family with us. We appreciate it. Next up is Nan Madden. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nan Madden. I'm director of the Minnesota Budget Project. I want to thank Representative Lee for bringing this bill forward. We strongly support House File 1400. To briefly recap what you heard in an earlier hearing, Minnesota's working family credit makes our tax system more fair. It supports working people to succeed in the workforce, to better afford their basic needs, and get children off to a stronger start. It's based on the federal earned income tax credit and builds on that credit's documented success in supporting work, reducing poverty, and improving health and education outcomes for children. A growing number of states have acted so that workers and families who use an ITIN for tax purposes and meet all other requirements can qualify for their state tax credits similar to the working family credit. And you have a letter in your packet that lists other organizations like ours who support removing barriers for ITIN filers to access the working family credit. Minnesotans who use ITINs play vital roles in our communities and our economy. They do their part to fund our schools, roads and bridges, and other public services we all count on. It does not make sense to exclude them from the working family credit simply because of the type of ID number they use on their tax form. The working family credit makes it more possible for low-wage Minnesotans to succeed in the workforce. And with today's tight labor market, we can't afford to have workers turning down extra shifts or job opportunities because they have challenges affording what they need to get to work. There's also a positive multiplier effect when lower-income Minnesotans have more to spend on groceries, diapers, rent, and other basics in their local businesses. Please end this arbitrary barrier to these valued members of our communities. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Madden. Is there anybody else who wishes to testify on this bill? That was the last one I had on my list. Just looking around. All right, so that's the conclusion of our testimony. We're going to move now to member discussion. Representative Elkins, you're first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a question for Mr. Klockstein.
Assistant Commissioner.
I can start while he's walking up there. So I think I understand how SSNs and ITINs work, but I just want to get you to confirm my understanding. So my understanding is, first of all, that only citizens get Social Security numbers.
That's correct.
That's correct. Okay.
No.
We could maybe have Ms. Iyer come up. No offense, Assistant Commissioner Klockstein is a tax policy expert, but maybe not exactly an immigration attorney. So we have one. Maybe we could, but we could tag team if that's okay. Great. All right. So we'll go to Ms. Iyer to answer that.
No, that's not correct. There are a wide number of immigrants who can get Social Security numbers. So people who are not citizens who can get Social Security numbers.
Representative Elkins.
Okay. Is it true that only non-citizens would get an ITIN?
Ms. Iyer.
Chair, Representative Elkins. I believe that would be most of the people. I am not aware of a restriction that you cannot get an ITIN if you are not a U.S. citizen, but that may be something that the commissioner can opine on.
And I saw that Representative Lee had a comment. I know she's been doing a lot of work on this. If there's anything you wanted to add.
I think the assistant commissioner can fill in the holes if I don't answer the question fully. But just so folks are clear, I mean, the IRS issues ITINs to folks regardless of status. It's just for people who do not qualify for a Social Security number. And, there is actually privacy laws because we want to incentivize people to pay taxes to the federal government, right? Mm-hmm. And so we actually don't really track that number. Like we don't report, these people are undocumented, these people are not, who have ITINs.
Thank you, Representative Lee. Commissioner, are you good? Did you have anything to add, or you're okay?
No.
Okay, great. Representative Elkins.
So, okay, third one would be, would it at least generally be true that when a non-citizen becomes a citizen, if they have an ITIN, it would be replaced with a Social Security number at that time?
Ms. Iyer?
Chair Gomez, Representative Elkins, yes, that's correct.
Okay.
And Representative Elkins.
Is it true that in order to get a paycheck in the from a Minnesota employer, you would have to have one or the other?
Ms. Iyer or Commissioner? Everybody's looking at each other, so I'm not sure.
I stumped them.
Sure, this isn't the first time that Representative Elkins has stumped a table full of testifiers, let's just say. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Bears.
Thank you, Chair Gomez and Representative Elkins. For the record, my name is Joanna Bears. I'm the Legislative Director of the Department of Revenue. Not sure I'm going to be able to clarify this much. When it comes to the Department of Revenue, we don't necessarily define what would be considered, what a person would receive.
Yep.
And that would be a kind of a question for the Department of maybe Economic and Employment or DOLLI.
Okay. Representative Elkins.
That's fine. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. All right. Representative Kosnick, do you need all of them to stay up there, you think, or?
Maybe.
Okay, TBD, nobody go anywhere. Representative Kosnick.
Probably not that challenging of questions, but just to help for understanding, would this encourage more Minnesotans to file to get an I-10 and now report income as Representative Lee kind of alluded to, as opposed to people that maybe are working for cash and not reporting taxes.
Is there anybody who wants to, I mean, yeah. Ms. Iyer. We're doing a little bit of speculation,
yes,
right?
Yes,
I'm just looking for to help understand the broader issue. I don't know the answer particularly.
Chair Gomez, Representative Kozadek, I think you're tapping into my tax policy wannabe geek, but on this question, but I do believe that absolutely, in the way that there is a lot of reporting about how just tax policies can create incentives for folks to do a lot of different things, that certainly this would, I think, create an incentive for folks. I should say, though, that there are a significant number of people who, vast majority of immigrants, are already filing their taxes. So I think, if anything, it might be that small amount of people who might not be, that would then maybe be incentivized, but I think that's a small amount.
Okay. Representative Kozadek.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I was trying to find out, and maybe if there was some research or data, if doing something like this would encourage more people into the workforce and on the to help us support the state tax revenues, as the purpose of that question. So if you run across something, feel free to share with the committee. My other question is just to kind of clarify. So if someone has an I-10 and they're filing their taxes, and their child or dependent has a Social Security number, they're not eligible? You're shaking your head. And I guess that's my question, if they're...
Yeah, Representative Lee, and I think Representative Lee might have had a little something to add on the previous question, so please go ahead to either of Representative Kozadek's questions.
Yeah, actually, thank you for the question and for the opportunity to explain the bill. And so, I want to highlight that we actually have a lot of mixed status families. And so the bill would make it possible for parents who are citizens who might have dependents who have ITINs to qualify, and also vice versa, right? So we also have a lot of children who are U.S. citizens whose parents currently pay taxes who are not able to tap into this tax credit. So I want to go back to something that Ms. Iyer mentioned earlier. You know, people who have ITINs are university professors, are researchers at Mayo, et cetera, right? And so they are already paying the taxes that they have to pay. So I understand the question and I understand the intention behind it, but you know, these people have ITINs because they know they have to pay taxes. Mm-hmm. And so I hope that answers the question.
Thank you. Representative Kozadek.
Yeah, I would just close then. I would probably tend to support some policy that if the child is a U.S. citizen, I wouldn't be as concerned of the status of the adult.
Mm-hmm.
They're both paying taxes, but if we're trying to improve the life of the child. So if someone's here with undocumented status and they have a child here, that child becomes a U.S. citizen. It makes it very difficult for the parent to perhaps return to previous citizenship somewhere else. And so that's kind of where I'm going. But so if I understand, a non-citizen filer with citizen children or dependents cannot obtain the credit right now, correct?
Right. That's okay. Right. Yes, Mr. Yes, Representative Kozadek.
Therefore the bill, I suppose. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Representative Kozadek. Is there any other member discussion? Representative Smith.
I just want to say, because this will affect my community greatly as a really strong international community in Rochester, and just want to say thank you for bringing this bill. And you've already mentioned Mayo, but I will just say there are a lot of people in our community who are in our community for 2 years, 3 years, 5 years from around the world, and they're raising children in Rochester and are not able to be supported by this tax credit, despite the fact they're paying all of their other taxes. And so I appreciate this bill, and I just wanted to give sort of a local perspective from my region of Minnesota that would be very excited about having this bill pass. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Is there any further member discussion? All right. Not seeing any. Representative Lee is going to renew her motion that House File 1400 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. And with that, it is laid over. I want to thank Representative Lee for carrying this bill. As she mentioned, you know, this is something that, that we've included in a number of tax bills over the time that we, that I've been in the legislature, and it's time for us to do this for these families. And again, just want to say how lovely it is to see all of these folks at the tax committee. You're welcome back anytime. We're here Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, 1 o'clock, or no, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So you have a lot of opportunities to come back and visit us. And so our next meeting will be Tuesday, February 14th at 1 o'clock. And with that, we are adjourned.